In life and recovery, every day is a little different. Embrace the good days, the not so good days, and the challenges, and acknowledge how you overcame them. Find the path to recovery that works for you. Learn more at cdc.gov/stopoverdose.
I'm John Oran, Puck's sports correspondent, and I have a new podcast called The Varsity, where I will take you inside the executive suites and owner's boxes that run the entire sports business. Twice a week, I will bring on the smartest people I know to break down the hottest topics in sports media and give you a window into the inside conversations that are happening throughout sports media. So be sure to follow and listen to The Varsity Podcast, available now on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
From the mind of a two-foot-tall talking Spunks puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at mybobs.com to play now.
It's Mike Shope.
You might be mocking me or you might be staunchly agreeing with me. I can't tell.
I'm mocking you.
And the Bulldog.
What is Fozzie Bear's role in this production?
On WGR Sports Radio 550.
Just quickly, what is the Copa America rule change all about? Is it about that America did not make the knockout stage, so we have to shorten games?
I would love if that's the reason. I didn't actually get any reason for it, but I'm all for it. Let's get right to penalty kicks. No need for extra 30 minutes.
We just do not want these. We want these games over with as quickly as possible because Team USA did not qualify and no one's going to watch now. I mean, how about just first goal wins? It's often what soccer is, not to take a shot, but how about just first goal wins? Like, let's just start with the overtime. We don't want any. We know no one's going to watch because it's just there's no Team USA narrative anymore. You have who are the teams that advance from their group? Uruguay and Panama, and one's in Vegas and one's in Glendale, like Super Bowl venues. One of those teams was supposed to be Team USA. How about we just flip a coin and move on? Let's just send everybody home. We're done here. We didn't win, so we're done. We will get back to this if I'm way off. Because maybe I am. Maybe there's actually a reason why they would change the rules in the middle of the tournament. But moving forward, it's always a pleasure to have Brett Boone join us. First Wednesday of the month, Odyssey MLB Insider. Insider calls presented by Grainger. With supplies and solutions for every industry, Grainger has the right product for you. Call, click Grainger.com or just stop by. Brett is also the host of the Brett Boone podcast. We just played a promo that features the most notable names in Major League Baseball and around sports every week. Hi, Brett. Happy 4th.
Happy 4th, almost.
Almost. What's a perfect 4th of July for you in your post-playing career?
Perfect or what I'm forced to do?
Oh, what do you want to do?
Perfect. I'd probably play golf and relax. I live in San Diego. I live by the beach. But when I walk my dog, I'm not a beach guy. Never have been. But one day a year, I agree to go. Don't make it a day, so that's what I'm going to be doing tomorrow.
it's not your dream plan, but it's going to happen. It does sound pretty good.
I love walking the beach with the dog for 45 minutes, and then I get my car and I go get a coffee, and then I go home. Mm-hmm. When I'm there with that, you know, with that fourth crowd, and it's just a struggle, and you got to sit there, and you know, it's 5-6 hours, and.
Yeah,
I know. I'm really complaining about real tough stuff here, but
everybody's there. Is it amateur hour tomorrow? Like everybody's at the beach tomorrow.
Oh yeah, it's just, you know, sloppy adults and had too much to drink. Not that I'm throwing stones here, but it's just the whole thing. It's the whole thing. It's not my cup of tea, but okay. I will be there. I will have a smile on. And I'll be. It's a good. I'm going to look at the positives. I got a bunch of buddies, you know, ex players, retired guys. A couple of my buddies have a house down there right by the beach, so I'll get to catch up with some of them. So there is a silver lining.
This might be a bad question, but when you're with your friends who played in the majors or baseball guys that you came up with and know, is there ever a pickup game that breaks out?
Absolutely not.
No. Okay.
Our baseball days are over. There might be a pickup volleyball game.
Okay.
Pick a volleyball. Yeah, that's usually, baseball, no. Never. It's the one sport that I don't think, once you quit, you're done. You might do the occasional charity softball event where it's more of a tip of the cap and a wave to the crowd, but nothing serious. You might play a pickup basketball game, but never baseball. It's kind of weird. I always wondered that, but I've never seen a pickup baseball game with ex-big league guys.
If I may, I played in a pickup baseball game 2 days ago. Of course, I had no professional playing career, but it was like the adults against the kids. And, right. You know, kids are like 12 to 15.
Oh, they want to bludgeon you, too.
Oh, my gosh. We put a five-run rule in place. Every hit that didn't make it to the pitcher's – wiffle ball. Every hit that didn't make it to the pitcher's mound was automatic out. Just doing anything we can as the adults to try to cut into their athletic superiority, you know, wasn't enough. Was not enough, but
– they'll still whoop you, yep.
They did. Do you have – was it special to play on the 4th of July? I think about athletes, you know, in football, it's Thanksgiving, could be Christmas, Memorial Day, 4th of July, Labor Day for you guys. Was it different at all?
No, because they all kind of run together. You obviously know the day and why we're celebrating it, but for us, it's 162 games, and they all start to, after a while, when you play every single day, it just all starts to run together.
Yeah.
So you know that, you know, from pretty much the beginning of April through September, and if you're lucky, you're going into the postseason, you pretty much know. It doesn't matter what the holiday, what the occasion, birthdays, whatever it may be, I got to go to work tomorrow. And that's just the way it is. And it's kind of what you signed up for. Like I think you mentioned it with the football season falling on Thanksgiving. Mm-hmm. And everybody else is, you know, gathering with family. And we're sitting there watching, oh, these guys can't be with their family. Well, they're not. They're never with their family. That's what you sign up for when you become a football player. So it all kind of comes with the territory, and it all runs together.
This, I think, is an easy one. But just one thing that's so incredible about ball players is the daily grind and just having to do, I mean, we all kind of go to work every day, but 7 days, 6 months, grueling, the physical aspect of it. I got to think routine is just vital. Having a certain routine in the morning, at night, after games. I mean, even if it's late, would you say that, is that something, I mean, you came from a baseball family. Maybe that was something that you sort of learned at a young age, the importance of having a set routine?
I think so. And I think as you go on throughout your journey, you know, obviously from being an amateur where it's not as rigorous and you got your high school schedule, then you get to college and they up the games on you a little bit. Then you get to pro ball. That was my first real glimpse of, okay, now baseball, this is my job. Yeah. And if I don't do my job, I get fired. That was the kind of the wake up, and all of a sudden it wasn't 60, 65 game college season, maybe a regional if you play really well. It's 142 games whether you play good or you don't play good, and it never goes away. That's when you have to start develop, grow up a little bit, use the experience you've had to find a way to, okay, if I'm not swinging the bat good, it doesn't matter because I'm going to play tomorrow, and then the next day I'm in the lineup, and then the next, there's nowhere to hide.
Mm-hmm.
And I often, you know, I joke with my football buddies that say, you know, your guys' job's kind of easy. You get in a car crash once a week. I said, but I get in a fender bender every night. And, you know, and it just chips away at you. And from the mental standpoint, I think there's pros and cons to every sport. The football life where you have 16, 17 weeks, one game a week, but everything's on the line for that one game, and it's so important to win that game. And obviously the physicality of a football, you have the whole next week to get ready for the next Sunday. But I said, it's easy for you guys from a mental standpoint. And then I thought about it. I'm like, wait a minute. If you're a quarterback and you had a horrible game, you've got to walk around life for a week waiting to redeem yourself. Whereas a baseball player, if I stink tonight, I go 0-4, I always got tomorrow. Mm-hmm. And then the flip side of that coin is, well, I'm 0-4, and then I'm 0-3, and then I'm 0-4, and there's nowhere to hide, and I got to play tomorrow, and I got Roger Clemens, then I got Pedro Martinez and Randy Johnson, and my swing stinks. But there's also times where I'm skipping to the ballpark because my swing's great, my team's playing great, and I'm just seeing the ball like a beach ball, so I can't wait to get to the ballpark. So I think there's pros and cons to not only baseball, but to every sport.
Were you superstitious if you were in a slump?
I say I wasn't. But put it this way, I didn't really if I had a real good game, I didn't really change what I did. I wasn't a Wade Boggs where I had to eat chicken every single day. But I used to, you know what I used to do? Other than jumping over the foul line, which is pretty normal for baseball players, it's kind of an unwritten rule. We don't walk on the foul line. I would not wash my jock if I got a hit or I drove in a run. And believe me, when you were hot and you were playing well, you'd get to about 15, 16 games, and you were kind of pulling for yourself not to get a hit.
That has to qualify as superstitious. I think you're right. It has to qualify.
No, yeah, that's as superstitious as I got. I just didn't fix what wasn't broken, mm-hmm. if that makes sense. I didn't go out of my way to do anything funny or funky. But if I did this the night before and I had a big game, if I went 3-for-4, hit a 3-run homer, we won the game, I might think about having the same thing for lunch the next day.
Yeah, nice. You know, back to you mentioned how, like, when you got to pro ball, you realized how seriously you had to take it. I'm looking at your minor league, your start in professional baseball. We've never talked about this together, but looking at your year in Calgary, the two seasons in Calgary as you broke in with Seattle, these are huge mm-hmm. numbers. I wonder what that experience was like playing in Calgary and just like whether you felt like you were ready to go up before they needed you or just what you remember about 92, 93.
I'll tell you what, you ask an 18-year-old Brett Boone, and this is before I even went to college, are you ready to go? Of course, I'm the best player in the world. And if you're not sure, just ask me that question again. I was about as naive as you could be as a young player. At 18 years old, at 21 years old, I thought I should be in the big leagues yesterday. Mm-hmm. And I went to Calgary. I remember it was kind of cool, you know, living in Canada. Never lived there before. It was just a different culture. I was getting to see a lot of it was like America, you know, Calgary side. But I enjoyed my time. But once I got there and I started to have a lot of success, it was like, no, get me out of here. I need to be in the big leagues. The first time I really had a kind of an eye-opener and had to grow up a little bit, I got to the big leagues, and I remember that call-up day. It was at Camden Yards, and I flew all night, and I got there and did all the press. And then I don't remember much because I was so tired, but yet I had that adrenaline. I got a base hit my first at-bat. Drove in a run, got to first base, and I remember the first baseman turned to me, and, you know, you got your ball for your first big league. And I remember he turned to me, and he said, well, Booney, congratulations, 2,999 to go. And this is how naive I was. I turned to him. I said, you know, thank you. I was very respectful. But in my mind, I kind of was rolling my eyes like, this guy thinks I'm only going to get 3,000 hits. He's got a lot to learn. You know, and then fast forward 6 weeks later, I'm hitting 197, sitting in my locker, and a buddy of mine, Mike Blowers, who does the play-by-play now for the Seattle Mariners, I turned to him and I said, wow. I said, you know what? The big leagues is tough. And he looked at me, and he'd been up and down 3 or 4 years. He was kind of journeyman at that point. He looked at me and, you know, kind of expletive. He says, you know, no blank. Yeah. And I just kind of went, wow. And that was my first real struggle was at the big league level, but it taught me, you know, it knocked me down and it taught me, hey, if I want to get better. I remember Edgar Martinez was a big influence on me early. He says, Booney, you got to hit that breaking ball if you want to get to the fastball, because as most young hitters, we're big fastball hitters and we don't like the wrinkle. And I had to make that adjustment. 93, I had some ups and downs, and then the second half of 93 on is where I really feel like I solidified myself as a big league player. But it was a process, and it was a humbling process. But it taught me things going forward in my career. When things were tough, I could go back and, oh, remember when you first got called up? How tough was it then? So you have experiences to draw on. It makes you a better player and learn from your failures. I think the most I ever learned in this game wasn't the big years where I was all-star and had the big numbers. It was the years where I really scuffled. That's where I really learned this game and how to deal with adversity.
Well, it's really interesting. Your first hit off Arthur Rhodes, did he play with you in Seattle maybe later on?
Yeah, he did.
He did. And I have 1 year of baseball broadcasting in me, and that was in Rochester, and he pitched there. That would have been 95. He was up and down.
I'll tell you what, I can one-up you on it. My first minor league at-bat was against Arthur Rhodes, and I got a base hit. My first big league at bat was against Arthur Rhodes, and I got a base hit. So same, and then we became teammates.
Yeah.
We talk about it. I said, do you think he kind of even forgot, you know, he knows my first big league at bat was off him, but I think he forgot about my first A ball at bat when I was fresh out of the draft. But I remember it vividly because I remember I got to Peninsula, Virginia, and they said, well, kid, you picked a bad day. This is the Carolina League. They said, you picked a bad day for your debut. And I said, why is that? And they said, this kid, Arthur Rhode, throws 100 from the left side, and it would have been better if you didn't start. So I remember that vividly.
Wow.
Getting up, grabbing the lightest bat in the rack because, you know, you're used to using aluminum in college at that point. And I grabbed the shortest, lightest wood bat, and I went up there. I remember, first at bat, triple off top of the wall, left center. And then I get to the big leagues, and just so happened, same guy on the mound, and then we became teammates for years in Seattle.
And those years in Seattle, when you guys were really it, like in 01, his stat line's crazy good. He was just up and down with Baltimore for like a decade, and then with Seattle, he really found it. So,
well, Arthur was a starter early in his career, and then he became a reliever, and then became a specialist. You know, and this is before the ultra specialist, which we have now. You know, they have specialists now from the sixth inning on. But back then, you had the closer, and then you had, if you were really good, you had a setup guy. Well, in Seattle that year, we had Kazuhiro Sasaki was our closer, and then you had Jeff Nelson, who won, you know, a bunch of world titles with the Yankees, and then you had Arthur from the left side, which were our seventh, eighth inning specialists. And then you had a bunch of other guys, too. You had a Norm Charlton from his Cincinnati days and the Nasty Boys. He was that lefty specialist out of Penn. So we had a real, real talented roster in 2001, and everything just went perfect for us that year. We just, too bad we didn't get past the Yankees in that postseason, still to this day.
Mm-hmm.
Won all those games, probably the greatest regular season team ever. But it always ends with an asterisk. Yeah, but you didn't finish the deal. So there's a negative connotation in that year. But I'll remember it as one of my funnest experiences I've ever had.
Mike Shope here with Brett Boone. Insider Calls brought to you by Grainger. For the ones who get it done, Grainger offers professional-grade supplies and solutions made for every industry and backed by product experts. Call, click, Grainger.com, or just stop by. Appreciate you going along with me on your past. We haven't gotten to 2024 yet. We always talk about the Yankees. Can we just talk about Cleveland for a minute and the season?
Yeah, we can talk about it.
Right? I mean, the season the Guardians are having. Best record in the American League, only the Phillies better, although it's close. You know, you're making the point about the 0-1 team and just like kind of the randomness, how hard it is to win in the postseason with short series and everything else. And that's more true even now. But how do you feel about Cleveland's big, you know, championship chances? Do they have enough to win it all?
Well, you know, I've been talking to a lot of different, you know, on a lot of different teams throughout our country, and I've been talking about each individual and how the year 2024, present day, it's a different dynamic in the big leagues versus 10, 15, 20 years ago, let alone 30 years ago, where that 162-game schedule was so important. It was such a grind, and it was such a marathon that when you'd win the division back then, it was almost like, wow. And usually the best team was standing at the end. This, in the current climate, the way it's set up in the 12 teams that make it to the postseason, it's not about necessarily winning 100 games. It's about putting yourself in position come playoff time to not only have a seat at the table, but to be healthy and hitting on all cylinders. I think now, more than any time in history of the game, it's imperative that right around when those playoffs start, that you've got to be tuned up. You got to think, not that health wasn't always at a premium, keeping your guys healthy. But it seems like in today's game, people are hurt at an unbelievable clip. I watch. I mean, it seems like every day somebody's getting Tommy John, somebody's out there on the IL. It's just a daily thing. So keeping your team healthy at the right time is the formula for going deep into the postseason. I think the day's team in the game winning it, I think those days are over. I think if you go to the 70s, the 80s, where there were four teams, two in the American League, two in the National League, and that was it. And that, those four teams battled to get to the World Series, and then it became two, and then usually the best team won. They were seven-game series where you really test the depth of your starting rotation, especially nowadays in the postseason. Until you get to the NLCS, you don't have a seven-game series. So you probably never even see your number three starter, let alone your number four starter. So it's not always about being the best team. It's getting hot at the right time. I think Arizona proved that to us a year ago. Back to Cleveland. These guys are unbelievably impressing me right now at what they're doing. You know, I thought with Bieber, the beginning of the season going down, I thought, well, that kills their chances right there. Tristan McKenzie recently got demoted to the minor leagues. And if you'd have told me McKenzie, Bieber are going to be out, I'd say you have no chance. The young kid Williams, who's got a bright future, he went down before the season with Tommy John. I'd say they've got no chance. You know, they got Ramirez at third base. He's a perennial MVP candidate. But who else do they have? Well, Naylor's really matured as a player, became a big home run threat for the Cleveland Indians. The second baseman, Jimenez, the guy at the top of the order. I'm drawing a blank.
Kwan. Right
now, the lefty. Kwan, what an unbelievable catalyst he's been at the top of that lineup. And I just look at him, and I'm waiting for him to fade. But I've been waiting for him now to fade for about a month and a half. And they keep powering forward. So this Cleveland ball club is really interesting to look at. You talk about chemistry. You talk about an aura that certain teams, certain years have. I've been on a couple where aura is a real thing. Clubhouse camaraderie is a real thing. This Cleveland ball club, I think, has got that. But the rookie manager and Stephen Boyd, who's an awesome kid. I call him a kid because I had him when I was a Rover with the Oakland A's. He's doing a wonderful job. And, man, nobody's still paying attention. Everybody's talking about Baltimore. Everybody's talking about the Yankees, the Phillies, the Braves. And Cleveland's kind of mentioned, but I'm glad you mentioned them because they deserve a lot of praise right now with what they're doing right at about the midway point.
And one thing they have that's a little bit maybe old school is Clase, I mean, as a closer, he's as close to a sure thing. Like, the year he's having, and we're not talking about, like, using him in other high-leverage situations or different things. You know, it's not newfangled. This is the guy who comes on in the ninth inning, and you're done.
You are done. And when it comes to Clase, I mean, there's several guys this year that have really stood out in that closer role. I look at a guy that hasn't had a much fanfare until now, Suarez in
San Diego.
In San Diego. Yep. You're out. I mean, it's basically, I'm coming with a four-seam heater. It's sneaky. You can't see it well, and it's by you. And he's basically been doing that all year. Yep. Clase's been one of the best closers in all the game for the last two or three years, and he's clicking all cylinders now. The bullpen's doing a great job getting it to Clase, and he's finishing the deal. I think in today's game, it is imperative that you have it at the end of the game that you know is a real...
From the mind of a two-foot-tall talking Spunks puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at mybobs.com to play now.
I'm John Oran, and I have a new podcast called The Varsity. I will bring on the smartest people I know to break down the hottest topics in sports media. Available now on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Recovery from addiction can take many forms, and quite often, it's a team effort. For those in recovery, having support often leads to a better outcome. And for those supporting people in recovery, they celebrate every milestone. Here's to family, friends, loved ones, healthcare providers, and community groups who are essential to helping people find their path to recovery. If you or someone you know is experiencing addiction, visit cdc.gov/stopoverdose to learn more about the various treatment options available.
Reliable closer. Probably going to be looking to be a buyer at the trading deadline if they can tweak and add a few parts here and there. But Cleveland's is the real deal, is, and they're proving so. I still think everybody healthy, full 26-man roster, I still think the Philadelphia Phillies are the best team in baseball, but Cleveland's definitely in that elite four or five at the top of the food chain.
Great season. Great conversation as always, Brett. Have a nice make do tomorrow, and we'll talk again in a month. I'm sure it should be a great holiday, hopefully.
All right, Mike. Have a great day.
Thank you, Brett. All right, anytime. Brett, well, once a month, but we certainly could talk about expanding that. Odyssey MLB insider Brett Boone. Insider calls presented by Granger. With supplies and solutions for every industry, Grainger has the right product for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Pretty cool. The baseball is so awesome like that. Like, having gotten his first major league hit off a pitcher that he also got his first, or was his first at bat, he might have even said, in pro ball at all, in Arthur Rhodes. Then they were teammates, both long careers. Arthur Rhodes pitched like 20 years, maybe. He made it a long time. Love that stuff. 803-0550 is the number. Tomorrow's the 4th. Pretty chill here. You know, talking Bills this week. Sabres, of course. You know, a little baseball here. I've got a Bills idea coming up next hour. But if you've got something on your mind that maybe you've heard me talking about this week, let me know. Lines are open. This is Mike Shope on WGR.
We're going to upgrade the offensive line, and you're paying the guy $40 million. It's not to hand the ball off to a $12 million back. My plan is to address the offensive line at some point here in free agency. We're sitting at 6. There's a chance there's an offensive weapon there. This is the year for Daniel. Plan all along was give him a couple years. Is he our guy for the next 10 years, or do we need to pivot and, you know, find somebody else?
Joe Shane, now the general manager of the New York Giants, former Bills assistant GM. Is he in a conversation with the team owner in that scene?
No, that's more of like the front office, like his staff. There were some directors of player personnel and stuff like that.
There's another scene where he's with John Mara. I do not have the channel on which this show airs, but lots of talk about it today. The Barkley point, some of it seemed almost like it was for the cameras. And then sometimes this shows like this make you wonder why they even do it. Just... It's sort of ironic how completely secretive football is, how paranoid, you know, the Bills, all these years, teams are. Like, what would happen if Sal got to watch 10 minutes of stretching instead of 8, right? Like, just the one time something got out that they thought cost them an advantage in a game, like, that's it. We can't, I mean, they allow some media access. I can't go all the way here, but it's just like that's the vibe. And here you've got, like, here's a show where we're just going to talk openly about who's worth the money and who's not. There was one thing in here about how they didn't think, one Giants personnel person, how do you like that, thought Christian Wilkins wasn't worth investing in, even though his friend, tried to recruit him to the Giants. Was it? Who's the lineman who's also great up front? Dexter Lawrence, is that who it was? Who's friends with Wilkins, and there was a Giants guy who was like, yeah, he doesn't get pressures on third down, and then every stat site was like, yeah, actually, stuff like that is just embarrassing. You know, of course, front offices, it's scout-laden, and most of these scouts, I think, maybe this has changed, I want to say, are just not here for what Sports Info Solutions tells them. You know, it's a little bit, it's definitely a stereotype. I mean, it's the Moneyball stereotype. But you go talking like that as it's fact, and then the facts completely refute your point. I mean, that should be fireable. If the Giants didn't sign Christian Wilkins because somebody told them that he wasn't good enough on third down, and every bit of evidence says completely the opposite, what use do you have for that guy? He might have held you back from having an elite pass rusher in your lap that might have wanted to play for you. I mean, you can't have that. The Giants do have that. The Giants have not exactly been, you know, a winning franchise for a long time. Maybe that's not an accident. I like the ideas of these shows. I always like talking about running back value, too. You know, the Barkley point is fine. The Giants, in my opinion, should never have wanted to pay Barkley that contract, nor should the Eagles. But it was interesting. And by the way, Jalen Hurts makes a lot more than Daniel Jones, and they found a way to do it. And they have been a winning franchise. Interesting moment here in the NFL, though, with running backs and money. And I don't know how it evolves, because it really was one way for several years. Just how many second contracts looked like mistakes, like Zeke for one with Dallas, and why would you pay these guys? Gurley, what happened to him with the Rams? And it just seemed that everybody figured out not to draft them in the first round, not to pay them second contracts, then this year, a lot of them did great, including Barkley, maybe as well as anybody. DeAndre Swift, Barkley, Joe Mixon was being released by the Bengals on the deadline day. Adam Schefter tweeted it, which means they all did within 2 seconds. They all got the green light at the same time. That's how that works. That Joe Mixon was being released by the Bengals. And then there was a correction that he wasn't. He was actually being traded to Houston. Okay, fine. Well, Houston wanted to get a jump on it, so they're going to give up some low draft pick. But then they gave him a new contract, bidding against nobody. So there was some running back thirst this offseason. Stevenson with the Patriots, not a free agent, but he got an extension. And there were other examples. And so I think you have with football the outsized, maybe to understate it, importance of the quarterback. Everybody wants their edge rushers. Everybody wants their corners, the shutdown corners, maybe left tackle. Certain positions still rate wide receiver. We've seen tons of money go to wide receivers this year. But in bulk, I think, you know, you take data and it can be easy to discount, I mean, starting players on the field, running backs, off-ball linebackers, interior linemen. We really don't need to spend on these guys. And with football being so wealthy, well, what are you going to do with the money? What are you going to do with the cap room? You might as well spend it. So I don't think the Eagles signing Barkley, the Ravens and Derrick Henry I didn't mention, I don't think these were egregious. Aaron Jones, Josh Jacobs, man, there really was a list as I think about it some more. You had running backs that you might think are mostly kind of at the end of the line, get pretty good term and dollars from new teams this year. Jacobs with the Packers, 2 years, it's so tough to really pin down. 2 years ago, with the Raiders, 2022, Josh Jacobs was a star. His football card stats, his advanced stuff, I mean, not to the same extent maybe, but he was a fantasy league winner. Josh Jacobs with the Raiders in 2022, with Carr there for most of it, was big time. Last year, eventually a new coach, different quarterback, he was terrible. Like, he went from good to great to terrible. It sounds like, you know, goalies, where this, although he is a year older and he's closer, you know, goalies can happen when they go from 23 to 24. For a running back, this is near the end of your career. But still, like, it's just so, it fluctuates like that. The Packers go and pay up for Josh Jacobs. Okay, they wanted him over Aaron Jones. I don't think he was better than Aaron Jones, but that's what they did. They've made a lot of good decisions. They go to Jacobs, and then they draft Marshawn Lloyd, I think in the third round, to complement with Jacobs. And it ends up, and this is the way they talk too. The Packers, Matt LaFleur seems pretty believable when it comes to his plans. And he had this with Jones and A.J. Dillon, like a split backfield. He's talking like that's what they're about. That's what they want to do, which really can make you question what Jacobs got money-wise. Is he even good? He's going to be a complimentary back, or at least, you know, part of a committee, probably. Why do it? It's not enough to just say you got to pay somebody, though. Like in the Hard Knocks show, I read this, how Shane was talking about with Barkley, with respect to Barkley, the age cliff, 27. Didn't he say like, why pay anybody at 27? Like, why do that? That's what he did, though. Like, that's what he did with Singletary. The move for the Giants, the move for a lot of these teams would be you want to dabble in free agency, okay, and maybe you have to settle sometimes. Maybe that's what the Giants did. They know Singletary from being here because they were here when Dable and Shane were here when he was. So they know him, and he wasn't super expensive. But I just love the idea of round four up. Round four, Saturday, is you can draft a running back on Saturday that should matter. Even draft a couple if you have extra picks. I like that. They have to be able to block and acclimate quickly, and those things are no given, and that's what will hold a lot of these rookies back. There are lots of these guys this year, and maybe it's too much to say you would just sort of like bank on them. But what I would want to do for my team is give those guys a serious chance to make it. And interesting, like how the Bills, what the Bills are right now with Ray Davis, who was a fourth round pick, and I think a likable prospect in college football. He's older. That was one sort of, and not exactly a breakaway threat, all right? So there are reasons why he wasn't picked earlier, not just being a running back, beyond just being a running back. So he's not everybody's cup of tea, but, I mean, he was a good player. And with what the Bills didn't do at the position, I think most of us are out here thinking that Davis is going to be, you know, if not important, relevant in their offense. And, you know, Cook is... It's not unanimous, just like sort of what Cook's ceiling is. You know, he was pretty steady. He does have some explosiveness. He did drop the ball in the passing game. You know, he is undersized. They really don't need him in goal line situations. Maybe that'll be Davis. Maybe Josh Allen will run for 20 touchdowns this year. That all remains to be seen. It's a very interesting and curious year for them. Running backs are a part of that. Almost the entire defense is a part of that. And of course, wide receivers. I've got an idea I mostly like for 5 o'clock when it comes to the wide receivers. So stay tuned for that if you're interested. 803-0550 is the number here. If you have a comment on the Hard Knock Show or what the Bills backfield might end up looking like. This is Mike Shope. Happy 4th. And thanks for being with us here on WGR. You caught me. I'm just sort of browsing Twitter, X. Feel really pretty good about today. What I've got planned coming up at 5. I kind of like this idea. Just reading about a guy who just tweeted about how he has this thing where he'll eat this one particular food even though his stomach hates it and rebels. And I won't say what it is. I'm sorry, but I have that. There's one particular thing that I eat that I know my body's not going to like it, but I still do it. Maybe you have something like that. I mean, I regret this because I'm not telling you what it is. In fact, it's like there's a certain big salad that I like, and there could be, there'll be 10 or 12 ingredients on it, and I don't know which one it is exactly that I disagree with, I guess, but I love it and I have to keep going back to it. Not big salad like Seinfeld, but just that's all I'm going to say. Sorry. Okay, well, tough start here to this segment. One more thing on the Hard Knocks I was just talking about. This is one, so there's always, you see inside a front office, we're talking about the Sabres these days, you've got the Giants here. And it's always interesting to me, like the analytics piece, how decisions get made. Are they data driven? Are they not? And mostly this fight, if you will, has been won. I mean, teams are so much more data driven than they used to be. I don't know like what a given scout would say about that. Maybe he or she would be resentful. Maybe he or she would welcome it and feel like this makes my job easier. You want it to align. You want your opinion to align with what the data says. But there are still some, you see it in shows like this Giants thing, some NFL people who just are not here for it. And there was talk of, in this Barkley point, it might have even been Shane, the GM, talking about the word identity. I think he used the word identity at one point, that like, or maybe the owner did. Like, if Barkley's not back, what is our identity?
That was the director of player personnel, Tim McDonnell.
Okay, thanks. Who cares? Why do we still use this word? I think it's easy. You know, you think of certain identities with certain sports teams. Often that's just because of how they were decades ago. Like, when I thought about this, to talk about this, identity, I think, you know, it's a popular one, and Sabres fans right now, for example, are going to want the Sabres identity to change. You know, you hear it from callers, like, too small. This has been a knock on the Sabres for much of their existence. You know who's not too small? Mike, Boston. And look at their results. And they win all the time. Boston has an identity like this for being, I don't want to say tough to play against, but, you know, bigger, right? That's Boston's, in comparison to the Sabres, that Boston is bigger. I'm not sure they always are. Patrice Bergeron is the best player they've had in forever, and he is not a big guy. Like, that. This is sort of the Blackhawks with Kane and Taves. This is a lot of teams. You know, it's one of these many things in sports. When a big team wins, see, size matters. When they don't, we just look the other way because we don't want to say a small team can win. That doesn't make sense. So the big identity. And I would say that the Bruins, you ask people to define the identity of the Bruins, they're going to mostly say the same things. Might not be true, but they're going to mostly say the same things. What about Philadelphia? Isn't it going to read the same, that Philadelphia's identity, or maybe if the Flyers aren't good, it's because they have lost their identity? It has probably been written hundreds of times. What does that mean? They don't have Ed Van Imp, you know, pile driving players into the glass anymore. Like, what's, has the show ever sounded older? But the so-called identity of the Flyers, 70s and 80s, is bullies. And I guess they're, even Lindros teams, you know? Like, I guess they can't be good unless they have that, some would say. I just think that that's all crap. You know, the Giants shouldn't care for 2 seconds what their identity is as it pertains to Saquon Barkley. If your identity is your best player is your running back, you're going to lose. I mean, that's what I would tell you. You're probably going to lose. And if they feel like they've lost something because Barkley's gone and now their starting running back is Devin Singletary, their problem isn't Devin Singletary. Their problem is Daniel Jones. And if their quarterback stinks, their identity is going to be that they're terrible, which is kind of what they were through Barkley's career there. They had the one lucky playoff year where they had a negative point differential. They haven't had a positive point differential in years. Until Dable's first game when they won in Tennessee, going for two at the last minute to win by 1 point, I think it was, is the first time they had a winning record since before Obama. Stop worrying about your identity, Giants. Why do teams do these shows? Because pretty much all you're going to do is just criticize them for what they say on these hard knock shows. They probably have to do it. Somebody's account of it, I read, it might have been Doug Farrar or someone else, I'm sorry. Somebody's account of it was it was a Giants reporter. The Dable wasn't shown much, and he was probably happy about that. And I think from a coach's standpoint, that might be true. Very interesting year for him, by the way, Brian Dable, who just had everybody's support getting that job. He won coach of the year with a negative point differential. That's how bad the reputation of the Giants was. And maybe also Daniel Jones. Like, your biases all come into play. The quarterback's terrible. You know, they don't have any star players, but wow, they made the playoffs. Must be great coaching. Or it could be luck. Must be great coaching. Then last year, abject failure. He loses Jones. Is that supposed to be bad? Screaming at Tyrod Taylor, screaming at the defensive coordinator. You know, you wonder about his relationships at this point. Think of him with McDermott before that. If the Giants don't win, maybe he doesn't last. And I don't know if somebody's going to be so excited to give him a head coaching job after that, even with his Coach of the Year award. I might bet against that. Could happen. He did a great job here. And a lot of people don't care about point differential. They think you're a magician if you have that and still make the playoffs. I think you were lucky. I thought the 17 Bills were lucky. Very lucky. They got blown out in games, but they got in. So, hats off. I got a little power rankings plan coming up. Not AFC teams. Reverse Bills pass catcher power rankings. Why not? You're already headed to the beach with Brett Boone. How would I rank Bill's pass catchers? Zach can tell me if I'm way off here. I've got like 21 names, including running backs, but we only go to 16. It's very strict. 16. So some guys are going to be left off. It's more interesting in terms of tiers, I think, than it is in terms of 1, like 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Although maybe 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 could be interesting to analyze. We've been doing it all summer anyway, how these Bills pass catchers stack up. So we'll give that a spin after the update. 803-0550 for your feedback. This is Mike Shope on WGR.
I'm John Aran, Puck's sports correspondent, and I have a new podcast called The Varsity, where I will take you inside the executive suites and owner's boxes that run the entire sports business. Twice a week, I will bring on the smartest people I know to break down the hottest topics in sports media and give you a window into the inside conversations that are happening throughout sports media. So be sure to follow and listen to The Varsity Podcast, available now on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
In life, some days are good and some could be better. The same is true for recovery. Both take work, both take adjustments. Finding your path is a key part of your journey. And then it's all about walking it every day. Embrace the good days, the not so good days, and the challenges, and acknowledge how you overcame them. Be open to every part of the journey and welcome it. It's unique and it's all part of you. Find the path to recovery that works for you. Learn more at cdc.gov/stopoverdose.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Okay, thanks. Who cares? Why do we still use this word? I think it's easy. You know, you think of certain identities with certain sports teams. Often that's just because of how they were decades ago. Like, when I thought about this, to talk about this, identity, I think, you know, it's a popular one, and Sabres fans right now, for example, are going to want the Sabres identity to change. You know, you hear it from callers, like, too small. This has been a knock on the Sabres for much of their existence. You know who's not too small? Mike, Boston. And look at their results, and they win all the time. Boston has an identity like this for being, I don't want to say tough to play against, but, you know, bigger, right? That's Boston's, in comparison to the Sabres, that Boston is bigger. I'm not sure they always are. Patrice Bergeron is the best player they've had in forever, and he is not a big guy. Like, that. This is sort of the Blackhawks with Kane and Taves. This is a lot of teams. You know, it's one of these many things in sports. When a big team wins, see, size matters. When they don't, we just look the other way because we don't want to say a small team can win. That doesn't make sense. So the big identity. And I would say that the Bruins, you ask people to define the identity of the Bruins, they're going to mostly say the same things. Might not be true, but they're going to mostly say the same things. What about Philadelphia? Isn't it going to read the same, that Philadelphia's identity, or maybe if the Flyers aren't good, it's because they have lost their identity? It has probably been written hundreds of times. What does that mean? They don't have Ed Van Imp, you know, pile driving players into the glass anymore. Like, has the show ever sounded older? But the so-called identity of Flyers, 70s and 80s, is bullies. And I guess they're even Lindros teams, you know? Like, I guess they can't be good unless they have that, some would say. I just think that that's all crap. You know, the Giants shouldn't care for 2 seconds what their identity is as it pertains to Saquon Barkley. If your identity is your best player is your running back, you're going to lose. I mean, that's what I would tell you. You're probably going to lose. And if they feel like they've lost something because Barkley's gone and now their starting running back is Devin Singletary, their problem isn't Devin Singletary. Their problem is Daniel Jones. And if their quarterback stinks, their identity is going to be that they're terrible, which is kind of what they were through Barkley's career there. They had the one lucky playoff year where they had a negative point differential. They haven't had a positive point differential in years. Until Dable's first game when they won in Tennessee, going for two at the last minute to win by 1 point, I think it was. It's the first time they had a winning record since before Obama. Stop worrying about your identity, Giants. Why do teams do these shows? Because pretty much all you're going to do is just criticize them for what they say on these hard knock shows. They probably have to do it. Somebody's account of it, I read, it might have been Doug Farrar or someone else, I'm sorry. Somebody's account of it was it was a Giants reporter. The Daboll wasn't shown much, and he was probably happy about that. And I think from a coach's standpoint, that might be true. Very interesting year for him, by the way, Brian Daboll, who just had everybody's support getting that job. He won coach of the year with a negative point differential. That's how bad the reputation of the Giants was. And maybe also Daniel Jones. Like, your biases all come into play. The quarterback's terrible. They don't have any star players, but wow, they made the playoffs. Must be great coaching. Or it could be luck. Must be great coaching. Then last year, abject failure. He loses Jones. Is that supposed to be bad? Screaming at Tyrod Taylor, screaming at the defensive coordinator. You wonder about his relationships at this point. Think of him with McDermott before that. If the Giants don't win, maybe he doesn't last. And I don't know if somebody's going to be so excited to give him a head coaching job after that, even with his Coach of the Year award. I might bet against that. Could happen. He did a great job here. And a lot of people don't care about point differential. They think you're a magician if you have that and still make the playoffs. I think you were lucky. I thought the 17 Bills were lucky. Very lucky. They got blown out in games, but they got in. So, hats off. I got a little power rankings plan coming up. Not AFC teams. Reverse Bills pass catcher power rankings. Why not? You're already headed to the beach with Brett Boone. How would I rank Bills pass catchers? Zach can tell me if I'm way off here. I've got like 21 names, including running backs, but we only go to 16. It's very strict. 16. So some guys are going to be left off. It's more interesting in terms of tiers, I think, than it is in terms of one, two, three, four, five. Although maybe 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 could be interesting to analyze. We've been doing it all summer anyway, how these Bills pass catchers stack up. So we'll give that a spin after the update. 803-0550 for your feedback. This is Mike Shope on WGR.
For those in recovery, support from friends and family often leads to better outcomes. Here's to those who are essential to helping people find their path to recovery. Visit cdc.gov/stopoverdose for information about treatment options and how to support those experiencing addiction.
I'm John Oran, and I have a new podcast called The Varsity. I will bring on the smartest people I know to break down the hottest topics in sports media. Available now on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spunks puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.